All right, welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Williams. I've got Dylan Williams, John Gaderos in the studio. Special guest, Tyla Brooks with Brooks Taxidermy.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for being here, Tyla.
Of course.
We're excited to have you on the show. And before we get started, we've got a lot of questions to pepper you with, but give a little update on the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife director search. So they've narrowed it down to 23 candidates that made the initial cut, and I happen to be one of those 23. So I don't know, only six of us will go forward to the panel interview. But they are right now fighting with the Department of Justice and the Attorney General for the state of Oregon, because right now, the way the law is written, all 23 of our names are supposed to be posted publicly. And so they don't want to, like, you know, out you to your employer that you're applying for another job if you're not even going to get picked for the six that get the interview, you know. So they're fighting with them on that. So it's going to delay things at least another month or maybe longer. But it's my update on that.
I think you're going to make it into the six, man.
Director of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I kind of like the idea of it. Yeah. It'd be like, yeah. It'd be the dream job to be able to try to help, you know, our state's wildlife and try to make our state a better place, not only for the wildlife, but for the hunters and the fishermen. So
it would probably be good for you too, because that's what your degree's in.
Yeah, my mental health would be just really improved probably. I feel like if I was doing, you know, if I got paid to go do what I love, I mean, that feels like a win.
Yeah.
So not that I don't like getting people in debt for 30 years, but
yeah,
I've been doing that for 20 years. So
really
a break from that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah. So, well, you're doing a good job at that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm good at that.
Yeah. Put people in debt.
You're, you know, when you go to the grocery store and people won't look you in the eyes because they're like, that's that son of a gun that got me into this big mortgage payment.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Now I'm buying Top Ramen for dinner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But hey, you got a house.
Yeah, true.
Better than renting.
Yeah.
It's even more expensive than a mortgage these days.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can paint the walls whatever color you want.
Exactly.
Nobody's going to tell you anything different.
Yep.
So what's new with you guys?
Not much. I mean, just working. Our trip. Did we do an update on that one yet?
No, we talked about going on the trip. So
yeah,
we did a 50th birthday party for Dylan's old man, J-Dub.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
Well, I would say right now that we rented that Ochoco Ranger Station cabin, and it was a cheap thing for us to go do. It probably ended up being cheaper than just a normal trip that we would have taken.
We charged $100 a guy, and that covered your room and board for, was it three nights?
Three nights, yeah.
Three nights, 4 days, and that was your food and booze.
Yep.
And we had a couple guys bail, so, you know, we didn't quite cover the expenses, but it was a good trip.
We still had enough food to last us a couple more weeks after that.
Yeah, but we could have survived in that cabin for a while.
Yeah.
These guys got to eat a lot of lamb meat, venison, some dirty rice.
Some giant steaks.
Giant steaks. Yeah, those were huge.
Well, that just, the steak night too just started out poorly. We didn't wait for the coals.
No,
we just kind of threw them on, and then next thing you know, you're eating beef jerky, but it was good.
Yeah. Kyle worked his a long time out on the coals. He really wanted it to be authentic, and the rest of us switched to the oven pretty quickly.
Yeah.
These were 2-inch steaks. They were giant.
Yeah.
You ruined 2-inch steaks.
I mean, I thought some of them were really good. Yeah, others were not as good. I packed over a 13-inch TV, though, for movie night.
Oh.
These guys were all making fun of me at first, but then when they got to watch Tombstone on widescreen on a 13-inch TV.
Mm-hmm. From about 40 feet out.
Yeah. We handed out some caramel corn.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
Well, we had that cheese and caramel corn mix, and we had to really suffer our way through that cheese popcorn to get any caramel.
Yeah, you know, that mix never works. You can't shake the bag right, no matter what you do.
No.
But we saw probably 8 coyotes, 1,000 elk, several deer, and some turkeys.
Yep.
Caught some trout in an ice-covered lake.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was cool.
That was, other than getting wet on that dock, it was a pretty good time.
When we were making the ice holes.
Yeah. Well, the whole dock just started sinking.
Yeah.
Well, all of us are getting on it.
That's a lot of Williams men on one dock, you know? I mean, it's not built for that, even in good times.
Yeah.
It's not icy.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
It was fun, though.
It was a good trip. Well, Tyler, I appreciate you coming on. We met you at the Sportsman Show, and I've seen your booth there for the last few years. And your taxidermy, and it's Brooks Taxidermy, and one thing that I would say always stands out to me is your blacktails. I mean, I feel like you do blacktails better than anybody I've seen. I mean, your blacktails are awesome.
I love blacktail.
And that's mostly what you have at your booth, typically, right, is blacktails?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you had a bear there, too, though.
Yep, that's my 22 spring bear. I had my husband's bear rug there. You probably didn't see it. It was in the back. It was kind of blended in. And then had a bobcat back there, but mostly blacktail.
Your bear looked really awesome, too.
Thanks. Yeah. That was a big boy.
Yeah, it was a nice-looking bear.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing taxidermy?
I started not that long ago. I would say, so I've had my business a year, and then I was doing, so 2.5 years.
Okay.
Not that long.
Did you have to do like an internship or a training to get into it?
So I actually reached out to another local taxidermist to see if he could kind of show me the ropes. I was just interested, and I shadowed with him probably 8-9 months before I went and kind of started doing my own thing.
Okay. So he took care of you and showed you the ropes. So would he just, you would just show up at his shop and...
Yeah. So my husband had been pushing me for a few years to start my own business. We just didn't know what I wanted to do. We had gone through all the coffee shop, you know what I mean? Just anything that I could work for myself. I'd worked in healthcare for 10 years prior to that and I was over it. And I have little kids and it's hard to do preschool and pick up. You know how it is. And daycare is outrageous. So I was essentially paying more in daycare than I was working at that point. So I need to start working for myself. So one day I was driving past his shop every single day and it was in the back of my mind, like, you know. And then I didn't really want to mention it because I was like, maybe my husband will think I'm freaking weird. You know what I mean? Like taxidermy, because I didn't follow any taxidermists. I didn't know how like popular it was getting that a lot of women were starting to do it. Yeah. I knew nothing about it. And then one day my husband said it. He's like, what about taxidermy? And I was like, yes. So he ended up... I was already thinking it. I was just kind of like letting it play out. And then we messaged the guy because he had done some stuff for us. And he said, yeah. So I started going in once a week for a few hours, just kind of watching the ropes. Didn't mount anything. Didn't really do much. And then I turned it into twice a week. And I was still working full time. So it was pretty hard to like, you know, squeeze in working full time. I was working 4/10s and worked an hour away. So I was gone all week. And then I was trying to pick that up on my last day. Anyways, it got overwhelming. So I eventually, things kind of ended poorly with that connection. Won't go into details, but I started my own business shortly after that.
Yeah.
And everything's nice. Been great.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, what made you, I mean, have you always been a hunter?
Yes.
And so you just always have liked wildlife? And so you were thinking,
so
okay, this is
the way. So grew up hunting with my dad, a lot of blacktail hunting. Basically, just driving around in the truck with my dad growing up, you know. And then I met my husband, and he's obviously a big hunter. And then we basically just, that's our whole life. I mean, we're so obsessive about it that we actually plan my child's birth around hunting seasons.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, we can get pregnant between this time and this time, and it's going to be born right here. So, yeah, he was born June 27th, so right in the summertime.
Yep.
So
perfect.
It's basically our whole life. So then the taxidermy kind of just fit right into that.
Yeah. Though Dylan can relate to that.
Yep.
Are you a planner too?
Yeah,
he starts
planning.
Well, and he also starts planning the next year's hunt the day after before it ends.
Yeah. All the states we're going like years in advance.
Yeah, I call these guys, we're still hunting season in October. I go, hey, so what do you think about doing this next year?
That's my husband.
Yeah.
It's just like,
we're sitting in camp. We'll be sitting in camp. And he's like, so next year.
Yeah.
Like, dude, we're still in the active year.
That's with us too. We're like debating, do we want to go to Alaska? Do we want to go to Wyoming? Like, what are we going to do? So I think this year he is doing, well, he actually booked this hunt without telling me. And I got really pissed off because I wasn't invited. Like, most wives are annoyed they're going to leave. No, I was annoyed that I had to stay home with the kids while he gets to go out with his buddies elk hunting in Idaho. So they're going to do that. Next year, I told him, we're going to Wyoming because I want to do Wyoming. We have a bunch of points there. I don't remember how many points we have, but I really want to do pronghorn and then whatever else we have points for, probably deer. Yeah. And then, I don't know. I don't remember what other states we have points in.
What would you say your favorite thing to hunt is?
Blacktail.
Blacktail?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I got with my husband, he was the worst deer hunter. Horrible. Like, horrid. And I grew up blacktail hunting, and like, this guy had the worst binos. Like, you couldn't see through them. And I always grew up with good glass. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, my dad taught me how to blacktail hunt. And we would get in fights dating because I was like, no, like, I have to glass this all over. He would just like, because he was an elk hunter. So he would just zoom to his certain spots. And if he didn't see the obvious, he'd just move on. And yeah. Be like, absolutely not. This is not going to fly. So I kind of had to train him over the years how to blacktail hunt. And now he's obsessed.
Yeah.
But he was an elk hunter and I was a blacktail hunter. And I was like, no, you got to learn how to do the deer hunting thing. This isn't going to fly.
But yeah, once you converted him.
Well, once you figure it out too, the blacktail thing, it is so addicting.
It's obsessive.
Oh my gosh.
Like, it's will sit there with my binos on a tripod over clear cuts because I really can't do much timber hunting at this point with little kids. Like,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I just can't. Basically, the method we have to do with kids is we have to drive around and glass. That's just what we have to do to make it work. So I'll just sit there and we'll put our tripods up and just glass. And I mean, I'll just glass the same cuts for hours, like, because you just come across one and then there's deer there. Like, where the heck did they come from? You know what I mean? So
that's how we do it. We do a lot of that driving around, getting to a cut and glass for hours. Mm-hmm. It's just my favorite thing in the world. When you're looking over a unit and you've already looked it over and you're just kind of getting a little frustrated that nothing's there, then you hit that one spot again and next thing you know, there's one standing.
Mm-hmm. And talking about binos, these guys just upgraded to those fancy self-stabilizing ones, you know? Have you seen those?
No, I don't.
They're SIG self-stabilizing binos and they're amazing. John's got a pair and Dylan's dad, Jason, has a pair. But he showed me this mode where you are scanning and it's almost like slow motion. It's like a digital thing to your brain where all of a sudden a tree that was over here is like,
what?
It's really weird.
So it's basically like if you had your regular pair of binos like on a tripod inside, like there's no wind or nothing, but it's like that, just freehanding it.
Even when you're moving in a pickup, you can look out the window and everything's good.
How much did those cost?
I think they're like $1,200.
Oh, that's cheap.
Yeah. For what it is, it's
your version of cheap is different than mine,
I think.
Well,
we have fancy pants, Swaro, everything, so
those
are not cheap.
Yeah. You should check those SIG binos out.
Yeah, like
they're interesting. They're cool.
Yeah, they have like, there's two different modes. So like you can use them just like as regular binos, like they're still, you know, shaky or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you can flip on the stabilized mode and it's more like for scanning. So it's like not as stable.
Yeah.
And then the new ones have, it's called target mode, where it's like 50% more stable. Mm-hmm. So like that's for like after you spot something, like it locks into like when you move it, it like really like lags behind. Like,
that's so weird. Yeah, I grew up with 10 by Leicas, and then we started hunting bigger country because I was just hunting because I grew up in the Forest Grove area, so the clear cuts and stuff were a lot smaller. I moved down here, a lot bigger country, so we went to 15 power Swaros, and they're shaky. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're good, but I'm not as good at stabilizing as my husband is. He can scan a whole thing, and, like, I can't. I have to, like, you know what I mean, really try to be steady.
I mean, the clarity of those glasses is top-notch, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a pair of the 15, they were Vortexes, and, like, I couldn't use them because they were, like, the shakiness, like, would just, like, make me so dizzy.
When I first started out using them, every season, I kind of get myself a little motion sick until I can kind of like regroup. But
yeah, and then I got these SIG ones, and they're 16s, and it's like,
oh God,
not 16s? A problem.
But it's like not a problem with that image stabilizing because
that's crazy.
You're gonna have to play with them.
Yeah,
just go to Sportsman's and check
them
out.
That's weird. I didn't even know those were a thing.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask, what's your favorite animal to work on so far in your career? Like, as far as if you're going to go do a taxidermy project and you could pick whatever you wanted to work on of something you've already done, what's been your favorite?
I would probably just say blacktail. They're pretty.
Yeah,
they
I
are.
Like making them look pretty.
Yeah.
Like mule deer, they're ugly.
More mangy looking.
They're just, you can make them look really good, obviously, but they're just not as pretty as a blacktail.
But you've done, I've been stalking you a little bit on Instagram and Facebook, and you've done some antelope too. It looked like your antelope look really nice.
Yeah, antelope are fun. The only thing that sucks about antelope is just sewing them up because their hair is so weird. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just
making
insane.
Sure it doesn't fall out.
And yeah, they're really delicate, and their ears are kind of a pain. They're like soggy toilet paper. They're so thin. But other than that, I like antelope. They're cool. I really like hunting antelope. So,
what's the worst part of the taxidermy job so far? Like, what's your least favorite part of the process?
Getting them out during, because they're just infested with ticks and fleas, like so bad. I started wearing hair nets last year because I could just, I had so many bugs covered in me that I could literally feel if it was either a tick or a flea in my hair. Like, I could identify the types of crawls.
Oh God.
And I'm not joking. Like, I would pull off like 50 ticks a day.
Oh, geez.
Like, insane. Like, it was so bad.
We call them keds in our deer camp. This makes his dad happy. His one Forest Service guy told us, those aren't ticks, those are keds. So whenever we have a tick on us, that's a ked.
Yeah. So dumb. Yeah. But no, it was bad. And I work out of my garage. So basically when I come in the house, I have to fully strip my clothes because I have kids in the house. And
Animals.
And animals. And it's so, it was so gross. I probably found like 6 or 7 in my bed this year. After showering, they'd still be on me. Yeah. And then I'd like have to do full body checks. And I think I had one embedded in my back this year. My husband had to pull out. And
so what about like freezing the heads first or something? Or like
you
putting them in really cold?
I just don't have enough freezer space. It's the problem.
I think we need to get you a walk-in where 100%. You could,
So I was going to, we have plans. We're going to build an addition shop onto our house. I don't remember what it's going to be. It's going to be like 17 by 60. It's going to go all the way back and we're going to have a walk-in. But we had some, I'll talk off camera, but we had some things come up this year that's going to have to push that out about a year or so. So
sure.
In the meantime, I have 3 deep freezers, but I can't really put a cape in the freezer with like the elk, you know what I mean, with the antlers. They're not going to fit in a freezer.
Yeah.
Right.
So I still got to skin it out regardless, cape it out off the face, and they're just infested.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought when I was thinking about
so
asking the
bad.
Question, I was thinking like totally different things, but that's a hard one to beat. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but just on those lines, I think it's kind of related. Advice to us as hunters, when we get an animal that we want to do taxidermy with, what's our best thing to do in the field to keep that in the best condition for you? Or what's your advice to hunters in the field for preparing that animal to bring to you?
Honestly, most people don't have a problem getting, so a lot of people worry about like getting it off. You need to get it off somewhat quickly. You know what I mean? You don't want to have it sit on the animal for a day or so, but it's pretty easy. Once you get it off of the body, the hide cools down pretty quickly. As long as you don't roll it up and just keep it in a bag or something, it's not going to sweat out and spoil as long as you kind of keep it a little bit aired out and get it into a taxidermist. But the main thing that I would say in the field is do not cut your capes too short. That is the main thing.
That's the biggest thing that people do.
Yeah, I had so many like people this year that honestly, they didn't look ahead of time of how to cape out an animal before they went out hunting. And then they try to cape out this animal and it would be like cut like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
that,
before the shoulder.
Well, that mule deer I showed you this morning, that was what happened.
Yeah.
It was my first buck. I was 17 years old. And we weren't planning on mounting it, you know, initially.
Yeah.
And so then we just kind of cut it short.
Yep.
And so then he had to put a replacement cape on it.
I had quite a few people do that this year. So I would say that's kind of the main thing. I mean, if you cut up the brisket a bit, it's fine. I can sew it. Any kind of nicks, cuts, whatever, I don't tell people to stress. I mean, just don't slice its throat. Right. You know what I mean? Obviously. I can still sew it up, but it might not look that great. Yeah. But any kind of nicks or skinning it out, people really stress about like putting holes in the cape. And I'm like, don't worry. You're not going to, once I sew it up, you're not going to know. You know what I mean? Unless it was something really obnoxious, like you blew the whole neck out shooting it. But a lot of people stress about that stuff.
And how much cape do you want? Are you wanting like at the armpit pretty much?
So what I tell people is you half it mid body. So whatever mid body of that animal is, cut it, circumference it, mm-hmm. and then you're gonna cut up the arms and then cut back to it. I, before hunting season every year, I kind of post a diagram of like, hey, this is a general idea of where you want to cut your animal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Just so people can screenshot it on their phones yeah. or whatever. It's just a quick thing. A lot of people also stress out about not cutting it down the neck. A lot of people like to tube it out. I don't mount my animals that way. I cut it down the neck because there's just different methods to taxidermy. Some people will put it on the mannequin and then put the antlers on. I don't. I put the antlers on and then the cape. So regardless if you bring it tubed in or not, I'm going to cut it down the neck. Because
gotcha.
That's and just how I
up.
Do it.
Sew yeah. it up on the back
yeah.
side.
That's just yeah. the way I personally do it. There's different methods. Everybody does it a little different. But you don't have to take forever and tube it out if you don't need to.
Yeah, and what about like salting the underside, you know, like on the meaty side of the...
Never do that.
Okay. Because we used to do that yep. when we were growing up. They'd always get out iodized salt and they start...
I literally, unless you're out backpacking and you're not going to be able to get it into a cooler for a while or whatever, it's going to be in the weather for a minute, do not salt it.
That's going to dry it out, right?
It makes fleshing a pain in the butt. Like it cures the meat. Mm. It's like fleshing beef jerky.
It just makes your job way harder.
And I'm to the point where I'm just going to tell people, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to take it because it takes me forever.
Yeah.
And it's hard because I flesh by hand. Yeah. So it's not worth it to me.
Yeah. Well, just charge them more. Say, well, that's $1,000 fee.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Like,
you come in with a salted hide, that's an extra grand.
Yeah, I had someone want to bring in a cowhide, and cowhides are thick as it is, and they had just salted it. And I was like, you better wash that off right now. Like, get a hose and spray that bad boy off because I'm not flushing a salted cowhide. Yeah.
I tried doing the extra fee stuff, like when they would drop off deer heads that like weren't skinned, but it never worked for me either. Yeah. So
you couldn't get any more money.
We would agree to it.
I'm surprised you ever got paid in general.
I never did.
He has never got paid.
But they were trying to give you practice because you're a novice.
It's a hobby.
What is the most unusual request or job you've done so far?
Oh, pets. Mm-hmm.
Like cats and dogs.
No way.
My first call when I first started my taxidermy business, I got my first call and I was so excited. And it was some guy on the coast that killed this feral cat. Like, it was a domestic cat, but it was feral. Mm-hmm. And he wanted me to, and he actually started arguing with me about it. He's like, will you do bobcats? And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not doing a domestic. And he was annoyed. But yeah, pets. A lot of people want their pets preserved. Which I think is morbid. I'm not going to skin out someone's dog. Like,
no.
It is gruesome when you know what I mean? If you see a skin inside out, like, I don't want to do that to someone's pet.
Is he asking for a shoulder mount?
Was he full body. For
a full body? Yeah.
Like a bobcat.
Well, and cats, to me, cats are the hardest because you see a lot of taxidermy cats that just don't look
100%. I'm still trying to learn cats.
Like getting the eyes right and getting there. They just, a lot of like, especially cougar mounts that you see, especially older ones, you're like, oh man.
Yes.
I mean, they're rough.
I've never done a cougar. I've never had anybody teach me cats. I'm just watching YouTube videos trying to learn them. And I have 2 life size cougar mounts that I need to do. And I'm a little bit worried. Not worried that I'm just, I know I'm going to be obsessive about it. Like, it's going to take me a full week of like, nobody talk to me so I can figure out how to do this cat. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's how it was with the bobcats. And I'm still learning the bobcats. Made a lot of mistakes, but.
There's a lot of washing of the bobcat hides I've seen. Like on the taxidermy videos I've seen online where they they wash them in the tub and then they put them on wet a lot of times and then they wash them again. And
so they're always wet. It's called a wet tan, but yeah, to get to get them fluffy, you got to wash them. So I would wash them. I think I washed the last two I did like two times. And then I let it air dry for a minute just kind of let some of that major water get off. And then I just blow dry them. But I got to get some kind of drying system for the cougars because I'm not going to be able to blow dry a full cougar. It's going to take me forever. So I got to buy some kind of whatever the big pros use.
Yeah.
Have you seen those, like, I saw a video. It was like a soft mount. It was like a teddy bear of like this coyote.
That's
or
on my
or
list.
Something.
I was going to ask her about those.
Yeah.
But no, that's good.
That was the coolest thing. Like
those, I think those I are really that. Cool looking.
They are cool. I think they'd be a pain in the butt.
I'll bet.
Because it's like it looks like a stuffed animal kind of.
Yeah.
Right? And you can pose it in different positions and stuff.
I've looked into how to do it. I really honestly don't have any interest to do it. I feel like I'd spend more time than I'd like to profit off of it, if that makes sense. But yeah, they are cool. A lot of people do them.
It's a new, kind of a newer thing, I think.
Yeah. They do it with bobcats and coyotes and all sorts of things. Yeah.
I think the one I saw was like a wolf, so it was like giant.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It was super cool.
I think it'd be easier to do it on a bigger animal, but doing that, sewing it inside out on a small little animal and then getting it all right, I feel like it'd be a pain in the butt.
It'd be hard to make it look authentic.
Yeah.
Probably.
And then somebody asked me to do it on a bear. And at first I said yes. And then I'm like, no. Like, I just have to be like, this is not going to be worth my time at this point.
That seems
unfortunately.
Like that would take forever.
But I feel like it would take me forever and I'd get mad.
Yeah. So, well, and you have a quality of work you're looking for. So you want to put out a good product.
Exactly.
Maybe experiment with a gray squirrel or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Maybe eventually I'll try it out. But yeah, it's becoming a new trend.
Yeah. What's the most, like, of all the animals that you do, what is the most of one species, like, each season? Are you doing mostly blacktails or is it elk or do you do a lot of Euro stuff?
Euros, lots of Euros. Euros are really popular, as you guys know. But that's obviously what I got the majority of is Euros. A lot of deer Euros. A lot of, not as, maybe a quarter elk Euros compared to deer Euros. But yeah, a lot of Euros. And then second to that is blacktail mule deer shoulder mounts. And then we go to elk shoulder mounts. So.
And then let's say that during the whole hunting season, what do you think the total amount of animals that typically are going to go through your shop?
That's a good question. I know for my first year this year, I got, in the 2 months, I got 50 shoulder mounts.
Holy crap.
Which is a lot for first year. You know what I mean? Like I'm a newbie.
Yeah,
so.
That is a lot.
So, and then I would say probably 150 Euros.
Wow. God dang.
You're
like
busy.
A lot. And then that's not including the bears and the life-size cats and you know what I mean?
And house cats and stuff.
And house cats. So, yeah, I was a lot busier than I predicted my first year.
That's great.
Which
that's
I'm thankful.
That's freaking awesome.
But my husband and I are, I mean, we're surrounded by hunters on both sides of the family, and he's from one side of the area and I'm from one side. So luckily we have a lot of people that know who we are and are supportive. So
yeah,
we
you
have that
have
going
good
for
connections.
Us. Exactly. So that helped out a lot.
And
so.
We talked a little bit before we started, you and John, cause we told you that John does some novice, European mounting. And so you guys were swapping notes on what kind of, chemicals and whatnot, but do you do the beetle thing? Have you done the beetle thing yet?
So I have a friend in town that has beetles, and I started outsourcing my schools to beetles. So that would have really helped me. I just started doing that at the beginning of this year. That would have really helped me out last year because I was so overwhelmed because obviously I'm a hunter myself. So I'm trying to run a taxidermy shop and skin out all these animals and flesh and euros while trying to fill my own tags. So this upcoming year, I am going to, I think, sending out majority to the beetles. So I pay them a fee, they beetle them, then they give me back, and then I do all the whitening and everything myself. But
nice.
That kind of just takes the whole initial process off my hands. So
do you notice a difference between the two, like beetles versus doing it the other way?
So
I've always wondered that.
Yes and no. Beetles hold up. Their sinuses are better. Obviously, a lot of people are really into I call them Euro snobs. There's like this new group of people that are really into like having really, really perfect Euros. So they want everything like pristine. So those people, I recommend do Beatles if you're going to be, you know what I mean? Like, it's just some people, they really like the way their skulls look, and that's fine. For me personally, I've never spent that much. I've never really cared that much about my skulls on personal animals when I was growing up and stuff. I'm like, oh, it's just a skull. Like, it looks like a skull with antlers. Yeah. But there's a whole new trend of people where these Euros are really becoming like very intricate pieces of work.
Where they want every little bone. So they use the beetle. So if you're using a pressure washer or something, obviously you can
I can do the simmer method really well. I still have all the sinuses and everything. It's just, I don't know how to explain it. You'd have to look at them side by side. There is a little bit of a difference. If you want a higher quality skull, I would recommend the beetles.
And for me, what I want is the most authentic version of the animal that I harvested. Yeah. That's how I look at it. So I got my antelope European mountain.
Yeah.
And when I did that, you know, he had some rough spots where he was rubbing and, you know, I wanted to kind of leave it that way and not spray it too black, you know, a little bit, but don't go crazy kind of thing. And I don't mind having a little color on the skull too, but I know some people want that white.
Exactly. Like me, like personally, my personal animals, I like the more authentic bone look to them, but a lot of people like it to be as pure white as possible. And it goes into a whole different method of the degreasing skulls. That's a whole nother.
You do a whole podcast on that.
That's a whole nother topic. So for the people that want their skulls fully beetled, degreased and all that, I'm outsourcing them because I personally just don't have the space and time to do that whole method.
Yeah. I've also seen people that do that dip. You know, they take a European
hydro dip.
Yeah, they dip it in like a camouflage.
I've had people ask me about that, and I can't.
I tried to do it one time. It didn't work.
I've heard it's really hard.
Yeah, it didn't work.
It probably doesn't look like those TikTok videos where they're just like, oh, look.
Yeah. No, I've heard it's really frustrating to do that hydro dip. Like, you have to get every ounce of grease out of the skull, and you have to wrap it up, and
So how do you balance your time with your hunting season and the taxidermy with
so
all those
bad
animals you have to deal with?
So bad. I basically would go out hunting all day, and then I would work until like 2 or 3 in the morning. Like, I'm not even joking. Or I would go to sleep as soon as we got home, and then I would get up at 1 a.m. I'd go out into the garage, skin out all my animals, flush them out, and then we'd go hunting, and then my husband would drive me around while I slept in the truck. So there was one time where elk hunting he had the premium deer tag this year for his unit, so we were out hunting, and I was tired because obviously, you know, I'm taking in clients once we get home at night, and I've been hunting all day. You know how tired you are after hunting and glassing all day, and then I'm having to do all this stuff. And we were deer hunting and elk. I had the Cascade tag, and I was dead asleep in the truck, and he just slams on the brakes, and I wake up out of dead sleep, and there's just a whole herd of elk just running right in front of our truck, and he's like trying to get me to get ready to shoot, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I was in a dead sleep. Like, that's how our hunting seasons go.
Wake up.
Like, there are no bulls in the herd, but it was an intense wake up.
Yeah, that's a lot. And I think balancing your customers' expectations, I think the challenge that I've seen, just as someone who's had a couple taxidermy things done, is people want their stuff back as soon as you can possibly get it done. And so even this year, we had 3 heads with the same taxidermist, and we didn't know you yet, so don't hate on us too much.
That's right.
But he does a good job, but he was going through some other things, and he was moving, and he had stuff going on, and these guys were checking in with me, and so then I'm checking in with him, and he's already behind, so he's feeling that pressure from. And I'm a pretty low key guy. I'm like, hey, I'm just checking in, no pressure. But he didn't always take it that way.
Yeah.
And so do you get a lot of that? Like, people just, when's it gonna be done? I dropped it off yesterday.
It's insane. I'm learning to not try to get frustrated. Which I don't get frustrated if people check in. Like, I'm like, okay, this is where I'm at. Most people just, they're not rushing me. They just want to know what process are you at, and I'll just give them an update. But I do have some people, like, I had a very nice gentleman that brought me his animal, and it was right during the sportsman show. And I told him initially when I got his cape back that I was going to be mounting it in February, and or that's what I planned on. And I had the sportsman show in February, and he was messaging me kind of frustrated that it wasn't mounted at by the time we were at the sportsman show. And I was like, I still have 2 weeks left in February. Like,
yeah,
give me a break. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's like, they just, yeah, they want their stuff right now. And they see if I put something else out, they want to know where theirs is at. And I try to be really upfront with my customers when I'm mounting. I let them know when I get their capes back, which not a lot of taxidermists do, but I go through and I let everybody know I got your cape back. You're looking at 3 to 4 months before I even touch it. Start looking at positions. I'll let you know when I'm going to think about start ordering your form, because essentially I work in a really small, I work in my garage. I don't have a lot of space. So if I'm going to mount, I'm reaching out to my clients and being like, will you be able to pick this up in 2.5-3 weeks? Because if you don't have the money or you don't have the time, I'm going to mount somebody else's. Because I just can't have your product sitting on my wall for a month and a half. I just, it's not out of any disrespect. I just honestly don't have the space for it. So yeah. I really coordinate, okay, this is your timeline of when I'm going to be done. Do you have the availability? Are you ready for this mount? So there's a lot of communication with each individual client. Like, I just mounted a whitetail yesterday, and I've been talking to him every day, sending him pictures. I send him daily pictures of how it's drying, and you know what I mean? I just try to be really involved with.
That's cool. I mean, that you're going that far with it.
Yeah.
Because that's another effort that you've got to put in.
Yeah.
And taking and those photos. And
it's this is my passion, to be honest. Like, I love my favorite part of my job is talking to people and their stories and their animals and hearing about all their hunting stories and all the animals they've shown me that they've killed. That's my favorite part. So it's just making those connections with those people because it's my whole life. Hunting is my entire life. Like, me and my husband are obsessive about it. So I don't know. It's just I wanted when I started my business, I wanted just to have relationships with my clients because a lot of taxidermists that I've used in the past, you go in and drop your animal, you don't hear back for a year and a half, and all of a sudden you get a random call. Okay, your animal is done, and then that's it. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I just try to build relationships with each client.
Yeah, and for your, you know, sanity, if you could figure out a way to automate it where they're getting an email update or a text update or something, and then it also cools them off.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that one I showed you earlier, the guy that did it for me, he knew taxidermy, but he didn't really have a, he was kind of retired.
And
I don't remember his name. I want to say it was Rick, but I met him through West Albany High School and he lived on Riverside Drive and I'm a 17-year-old kid. So my mom would drive me there. I was a late bloomer, so I need my license until I was 17. But so she drove me there in the beginning. Maybe I was a 15-year-old kid initially, actually. I shot that buck when I was 15. I don't know. We'll check the dates. Everything gets blurry the older you get. But I would take him like $100 like every so often when I had money, you know? So I would take him $100 every few weeks and he would show me the progress and I'd get to check out other stuff. It was just really cool just to kind of hang out with him a little bit and, you know, and I was a young kid and I think I paid $450 or something. So it was like, I had to work towards that payment. But
that's cool.
That's how it was. Like, that's how I started doing the Euro mounts and stuff was I shot a buck. I don't remember how old I was when I shot that one, but we took it to a taxidermist and it was just the waiting period and same thing, like not hearing anything until, oh yeah, it's done. And it was like 9-10 months later, which, you know, whatever, like I didn't know the whole process or anything like that. But then I like started looking into it and I'm like, man, I could knock these things out like pretty quick.
A lot of people do it themselves.
Yeah. And then that's ever since then, like I started doing them and then doing other people's, you know, families and stuff like that. And I mean, it's been fun. I like doing it.
Well, the way I look at it too, though, when I take an animal to a taxidermist, taxidermists are artists. You know, they are giving you a work of art and they're trying to be as authentic to that animal as they can be with whatever tools you've given them to do their job.
Yep.
And I don't want to rush an artist personally.
No.
So like, I don't care how long it takes as long as I get the product that I'm wanting,
100%.
You
know,
and someone like you, I can already tell we don't know each other that well, but you seem to be a perfectionist. So it's like, you probably, if it doesn't look right, you're going to mix it up and get it to where you're happy with it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, when I did my second bobcat, I had a kind of a friend give me, he was a trapper, and he gave me a bobcat to practice on, and he said that I'll pay for the price of materials. I spent, and I had a hard time with that bobcat compared to my first one I had ever done. I spent 40 hours on just trying to get it right. Because I mounted it and it just didn't look right. And I was like, I got to tear it all apart and redo this. Like, I'm not going to put out a piece of, you know what I mean? If it's not exactly what I want, it's not going out. So
yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm obsessive about all of everything. When I mount an animal, I pull it off the wall every single day, make tweaks to it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm obsessive. I'm just out there. I take pictures because animals look different in pictures than to your eye. You notice a lot more imperfections in pictures than you do to your eye. Hmm. And so I'll go and I'll take pictures of my mount like each day. And if there's something that I can see in a picture, I'll go and tweak it. I don't know. It's a different perspective that I've learned that... Hmm.
And you can zoom way in, probably.
It's just, I don't know. It's just different. When you look at something with a naked eye, you're like, oh, that looks great. And then you take a picture of it and you'll be like,
yeah.
You can just see a little bit. You know, I don't know.
Did you think that when you saw that strawberry mountain buck where you're like, oh, that looks great?
That just looks like an old fashioned shoulder mount. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That just looks like, yeah.
80s. Yep, 80s exactly. Taxidermy job.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's got a rattle in there, too.
Yeah, I believe likes it. To play with I believe it. Yeah. Yeah. I like how it's just cut right at the base of the neck.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
just a rough idea because you are pretty good at, you know, talking with your customers, like you're saying, but
yeah.
You know, rough turnaround on like a shoulder mount, European mount.
So European mounts depends on where I'm at. The beginning of the season, I'm getting them out back within a week. In the middle of the season, you're getting them back about a month and a half. Just because, not that they're not halfway done, but I set each one in the bucket for about a day and a half, 2 days. Depends. Each school needs a different amount of whitening, or treatment or whatever I got to do. And if you can think that many backed up, and I only have one tub of whitening because I can't spend $300 on 10 tubs. Like that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Right.
So each school is going in one at a time. So it's basically just waiting on to get whitened.
Yeah. So it's basically just what you kind of, if you start backing up, it's when you'll see
as the season goes on, like in November, you're probably, yeah. And I have one right now that, I think he gave it to me in December and it's almost done, but it was a velvet cactus buck. So they had to dry it. It had to dry out and it's a lot more work than just an average because you have to cut off the antlers and you have to preserve them and you have to do the skull and then you have to drill them back together. It's just, yeah.
That velvet preservation looks like it'd be tough from what I've seen, like
so
trying to preserve
velvet.
Yeah, so there's
this thing called
Velvilock. I've seen that.
And that's what I buy.
And are you just kind of injecting it?
No, you just spray it on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you just let it dry.
I looked at buying some, like, when we were going bow hunting and stuff. That's what I thought about doing, but then I ended up not ordering.
Also, I recommend if you're going out bow hunting and you're kind of a ways out, I remember we were talking about the salting thing. There's this thing called Stop Rot, and I think it's the same company. No, I bought it from the taxidermist. Anyways, I think you can buy it from the Velvilock company as well. But basically, like right when you you skin out your animal, you can spray it on and it should help preserve it and not let it slip as quickly.
And are you spraying it on the outside of the hide or the inside?
No, the inside.
Okay.
So it's something to look into if you go over east or whatever and you're archery elk hunting because it's warm out and stuff.
Yeah.
It's something to look into if you're interested.
So a finished taxidermy piece. So I've got this deer head in my office. I used to vacuum him once a year. Mm-hmm. What's the best way to keep it looking good?
I just take a damp rag, just wipe, dust it down. You can dust it really with anything. That's what I do. Don't put the damp rag on the nose, the eyes, anything like that, because there is a water-based paint on them.
Mm, that's good to know.
Yeah, so never do that. If you really want to clean the eyeballs, take a Q-tip with some Windex. It's the easiest way, and you can kind of just clean the eyeballs, but don't get on the eyelids at all. You risk it removing paint. So, okay. But and then I take an olive oil or any kind of oil, and I put it on a rag or a paper towel, and I could just condition the horns with it. Brings back the color a little bit. Oh. I do that to all my personal animals. It might leave them shiny for a day, but the shininess goes away. So
it helps hold the color, though.
Yeah, I like to do it. It just kind of brings out the color, because you know how they dry out, and then you put some kind of oil on it, and it just brings out vibrance of the colors.
That's what I started doing. It wasn't with the oil, but I found it was a light stain. That, like, I don't know, I tested it out on one of mine before I started doing it to other people's, but it gave it more of that, like when it's raining, like the shimmer on like blacktail antlers, like it gave it that look, and I really liked it. So then I took all of my antlers off the wall and put it on all of them. But
yeah,
the oil, that's
just what I do. Yeah. That's what, you can buy like antler conditioner, whatever, from the taxidermy. I just use olive oil. Yeah. It's cheaper and easier.
It's a good idea, really.
Or you can do mineral oil or whatever. Like, you can do vegetable oil. It wouldn't do anything.
So one thing I had on my list to talk to you about, and you kind of brought it up earlier, is social media and taxidermy, and specifically women in taxidermy. Mm-hmm. So it does seem, and I don't know if women are just better at social media than men, most likely. I mean, women, we all know, are better at most things, right? We're willing to admit it. You know, we've accepted that here on this show. Mm-hmm. But you're actually the only second female we've ever had after 30 some episodes. So
really,
yeah.
Well,
so
go me.
I know. Well, we're happy to have you.
Yeah.
But you know, do you watch what other taxidermists are doing and just pay attention to their videos? And do you follow any particular taxidermists?
Yes, I follow quite a few, and I, like you said, I stalk the heck out of these other taxidermists. That's how I learn. Mm-hmm. That's how I've learned all my techniques. I'll go through all the big name taxidermists in Oregon, Washington, wherever the states, and I screenshot. I am obsessive. Like, whatever they're doing, I try to, and that's how I've learned all the different methods. So
yeah, if you see something really cool, you're like, okay, I got to figure out.
Everybody has a different way to do noses, eyes, ears. There's so many different methods in taxidermy that you probably don't notice as just an average hunter. But when you get into the taxidermy business, everybody has their very unique styles. And so I go through all the big ones and pick out what I like from each one and then put it into my own. So that's how I learn. I'm a stalker.
That's good. That type of stalking, I think, is
appropriate.
Yeah,
I just follow them all, and I'm like, oh, they're really good at this.
So. And most people want to share about what they do. So I feel like most people in the space are fairly approachable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So. And there's enough business. I mean, are you in the mindset of, I'm going to shut off at a certain amount of clients and not take on new clients?
Not clients. I think I'm going to have a quota each year of shoulder mounts that
are reasonable to meet a good timeline and all that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I never really want to get longer than a year for just an average shoulder mount. That's too long. This year I was quoting my clients about 6 to 9 months, which it's a process to skin, flesh, salt. It takes a while to get them to dry up. Which I ended up putting little heaters in my area to help the drying methods during the wet months, because it was just taking so long, because there's so much moisture in the air and that salt pulls moisture, if anybody's familiar with that. But it was taking my hide so long that I ended up putting a little heater in there, and it made my drying process so much faster. But that kind of got me a little bit delayed because I was having a hard time getting all these hides dried up in this sopping December, January weather. And then you have to ship them out to a tannery. And then it takes a tannery 3 to 4 months to ship them back to you. It's just a whole process that people don't realize of what takes so long in taxidermy. You think they just drop them off and then, oh, it's good to go. No, it's like a 6 month process to even get the hide back. So. Yeah. Yeah, so I never want to get more than a year. My cutoff for shoulder mounts this year, I'm thinking like probably 70. I don't think I'd be able to do more than that within a reasonable timeline.
That seems like a lot.
Yeah. It is a lot. Yeah. It is a lot. And that's like the max, like.
Yeah.
Because I'm at 50 and I'm like.
When you're at like 62, you're going to be like, man. Why did I say 70?
It'll be easier this year though, because my kid will be in kindergarten, so I'll be able to work during the day and not in the middle of the night. Yeah. Because I can't. I can't work with him during the day.
Yeah.
It's brutal. So,
last question I have on my list, was, and I just blanked it. again, back to that brilliant mind that I've got going on. What was it? Oh, competitions. Are you interested, or have you done any taxidermy competitions?
I have not, and I'm thinking about it. The problem with me, I'm not a person that likes to have attention on me. So that's kind of a hard thing for me to go to a competition and be like, oh, here's all my stuff, judge me. Like, I can be like that on social media, but when it comes, I'm a pretty shy person. So I need to get more confidence, I think, to go and start doing competitions.
From what I've seen with other taxidermists, it's they plan a competition piece,
yeah,
and then they focus on that piece for the competition,
yeah,
and you know, it takes whatever amount of energy to get it where, yeah, they're happy with it. But you do really good work.
Yeah.
So I
want to do, I don't know if you guys saw my buck from this year, but I want to do that into a competition piece, and I have all the stuff for it. I just don't think it'll be done by this year. So I think within the next couple years, I'll submit some pieces in.
I don't know if there's a monetary award for those competitions or if it's just bragging rights.
I think every piece gets a ribbon, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's first place, blah, 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 and there's different categories, but I think a lot of pieces, I think you kind of just get a lot of ribbons, but I just haven't, it's just not me to go do competitions.
Yeah, you're not doing it for that reason.
Yeah. It's just, I will eventually. I don't know when. Yeah. I don't have any real desire to do it. I am doing all the methods of the competition. So I started doing the replacement noses that has all the realistic septums. I'm doing all the ear liners and I'm doing all the methods of that. I don't know if I want to go there.
Well, and your work speaks for itself. So I don't think you have to, you know, it's just if you wanted to.
It's more of a just something to do, to go socialize with other taxidermists and go have the judges critique, you know what I mean, give you advice and stuff, which I will. I think next year I'll do it, but.
And you're leaving for bear hunting today or tomorrow?
If I decide to haul the trailer.
Okay, yeah. So it's still up in the air?
It's still up in the air. So, like, yeah.
We got to squeeze her in before her bear hunt.
Yeah.
She usually bear hunts the weekends.
Yeah,
so
I haven't decided. If not, we're going to be going Saturday and Sunday, and we will just drive down and drive back, but long days with kids in the truck.
Oh yeah.
It's brutal.
Do you guys do any other sportsman shows or is just the one in Albany?
So, speaking of that, I just started doing the one in Albany. Apparently this guy that I was right next to at the sportsman show, I don't know if you guys remember him. He had all the elk shoulder mounts. He was right behind you guys and he was selling that bloodhound, like, spray. Anyways, he supposedly bought a sportsman show in Vancouver.
Like, bought the rights to the show?
Like, a whole thing. Huh. I don't know. And he's trying to get a bunch of vendors signed up on it. I guess it's going to be at the Clark County Fairgrounds or something. I don't know anything about it. But apparently I'm going to that one.
Okay.
Whenever that is.
Yeah. You're going to pack the booth up and head. Yeah.
I thought about the Portland one, and honestly, I don't think I can handle all of that clientele, if that makes sense. Like, I'm a one-person show.
Yeah, you don't know that you need that.
Yeah, like, I have a lot of support from just our local community that I don't know if I need to add a whole nother ball game up there. I'm just one person, and my husband doesn't help me, so.
That show is huge, too.
Yeah.
And it's, like, overwhelming just being there.
It's expensive. It's $1,500 a booth up there.
Yeah.
So. Oh. That's just for a small booth, not a big one. And for taxidermy, you kind of need a big booth because stuff takes up a lot of space. But.
Yeah, how do you set up that display? That is always overwhelming to me. When I see all those heads on that little fabric-y pipe thing, I'm like, I mean, you guys had a board or something, but I'm like always nervous they're going to fall off or something.
Yeah, no, we had a, we built like a big whatever wall with shiplap and basically
hung
them up. But next year I'm going to do a double booth, so we gotta like make it extra long. And then I'm gonna do the float this year for the strawberry parade, and I'm trying to think, how the heck am I gonna get shoulder mounts on a float? So if you guys have any ideas, shoot them over, because I'm like, I don't know, we're gonna have to build a wall and anchor it down and like I don't know, it's gonna be fun.
That's an
idea.
You know,
and only if it's sunny out.
Help us.
Don't give me that title, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You're definitely going to have to think about that one a little bit.
Yeah, because I could build a wall down the middle, but then you can only see it from one side. You know what I mean? I don't know. We'll have to figure it out.
I was going to bring my antelope to the sportsman show the second day, but then the guys across from us, they had a European mount that got shattered, and they glued it all back together, but I was like, I'm not bringing mine anymore. Yeah. No. Nope. Yeah, not doing it.
I was actually, I had some stuff up, and next year I'm definitely going to get a lot of please do not touch, because I had a lot of people come up and touch. And I'm like, I had my elk hide out front, which I should have known since it was on the table. But at the end of the day, I'm taking that home and putting it on my own couch. So there's a lot of people that were just like running their fingers through it. I'm like, okay, but next time I'm not going to put that out there just because it's a personal piece.
Yeah. I have a story about that with my little sister. So my little sister is 20 years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how old she was. She was probably like 5.
Yeah.
And I was moving from Corvallis to Albany, and I had that deer in my pickup. Mm-hmm. And then when I got it home, I wasn't giving her enough attention, and I had it sitting on the ground, and she raked her hands from the bottom of it up, but like against the grain, and like multiple different like claw marks. I was so mad when I walked. Kids. I mean, I combed it all down or whatever, but I still was freaking out. I was like, what did you do?
Kids. Yeah. Kids are brutal.
Yeah.
We have some pedestal pieces in our house, and thankfully they haven't. It was more of the dog peeing on the pedestal. For some reason, it was like the perfect thing. The dog thinking he needed to pee on it. And I was like, dear God. So I had to put it in the corner so he didn't pee it in. life with animals and kids.
Well, Tyla, if somebody wanted to follow you or get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
So on Instagram, I'm just brooks.taxidermy. And then my little picture icon will just be black with a white logo, Brooks Taxidermy. And then on Facebook, same, just Brooks Taxidermy, LLC.
All right.
Awesome. And
so I post a lot on social media, kind of just to keep everybody kind of just cued into, I don't know, people like looking at that stuff. So I just try to be as involved as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you post something, I always check it out.
Yeah.
Because it's exciting to see other people's
stuff. Exactly. Yeah. And so, it's exciting for me to show it off. Like, I get just as excited as if it's my own personal piece. Like, I kind of like need to tone it down sometimes. I'll like send so many pictures to clients and they're like, oh, it looks good. I'm like, sorry, that's 47 of the same picture, but it looks really good.
Do you guys have any more questions for her? Did I pepper her enough?
I think you peppered her pretty good.
I kept them going.
Yeah, you did. Know. You did a good job.
I could talk all day about this stuff. Yeah. It's my whole life.
Do you have any tips for Johnny on his next European project?
Oh, no.
Don't buy the expensive stuff. Stick.
I mean, if that's working for you, then do that. I'm going to try that, though. That's interesting.
I mean, I don't know how well the expensive stuff works, but the cheap stuff has been working great.
Yeah. So the expensive stuff works great. I mean, it will burn off your fingers from touching it. It's brutal.
Oh, man, it's strong stuff.
It's real strong.
I do all my stuff on my back porch, so I'm sure my neighbors, they just love all the sweet smells. Like, they know when it's hunting season.
My poor neighbors. Yeah. My garbage can is so bad in, like, September and October. It is foul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, maggots everywhere. Yeah. It is disgusting. And actually, I have a neighbor that is really rude behind me, and so I just stink it up back there.
Just let it happen.
Yeah, she's so mean, and I'm like,
that's what you get.
Yeah, and my yard drains right into hers, so like all those like juices are just going straight into her yard.
Enjoy that barbecue tonight.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
she's just a grumpy old woman.
I was doing some yard work here this last weekend, moving like my wood pile and stuff around. And anytime I would get like I'd take the bottom jaws off and stuff, I was just throwing them into my wood pile.
I have so many bottom jaws in my backyard.
And I totally spaced it, but then I hauled all this wood out and there's just this pile of bottom jaws. I'm like, oh man, like I should probably get these out of here too. But
well, so my propane tank caught on fire like a month ago, which I didn't know could do. And then I was afraid the propane tank was going to blow up. So I obviously didn't go and turn it off because I was like, well, I'm going to die. Anyway, so I had to call the fire department to like put this propane tank fire out. And when they got back there were dead like Jaws everywhere. I just have a pile of Jaws, and I was like, I should clean this up because this is like looks morbid.
Next thing you know, you got a bunch of detectives showing up.
Straight up, I mean, they're all deer and elk, but there is a pile of them. And
yeah, what I mean, what did you do with that? I would think you could like grind them up and use them for something, but I don't know what. But
I haul them to the dump.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, it's going back to the earth.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Just but sneak I would them think, in my trash can.
And I don't think I'm supposed to do this, but when we're out hunting, I just throw it out in the woods, too.
Yeah.
I mean.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
I mean, I think that's going more back to I've
I'm
heard.
Pretty sure I'm, that's illegal, but well, I still do it. Yeah. What are they going to do?
Yeah, cut or break.
Yeah, if anyone's listening, it's not a big deal.
I mean, who doesn't go dump their own stuff in the woods?
Yeah.
Oh, that brings me to an illegal activity question that you thought of. Remember, have you had to deal with suspected poachers? So, you know, someone poaches an animal and then brings it to your shop.
I have not yet, but when I was at another location, I had heard about it quite a bit. But basically, I have to ask for tags and blah, 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 blah. And if you don't have that, I'm not going to risk putting my name on it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that pretty regulated, too, as far as, like, you got to report to ODFW?
I don't have to report, but I have to have it. If they ever come and check all my stuff, I have to have it all available.
Have you been checked?
No.
Yeah? No.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to find anything exciting.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
But like, I don't have to write down, like, I had a guy bring in an old whitetail. Like, that is dad shot. I don't know how long ago. Like, I don't have to log that stuff, obviously. You know what I mean? Because nobody has the tags for that from 40 years ago.
Well,
but
yeah.
Recent stuff, I have to make sure everything is logged and
that makes sense.
Ethical.
Yeah. My uncle's, this is kind of like ratting him out, but. They did some taxidermy, mm-hmm. and so they mostly were duck hunters, but they did some deer heads and stuff, and they were at a garage sale, and there was a taxidermy piece that was for sale. This was a giant buck, and they ended up with that, and I don't think they paid the garage sale person for it, so it was a little shady what they did. My uncle's no longer alive, so rest in peace, but whenever I'd go in the basement look at that thing, I'm like, that thing is a monster.
Yeah, you know? you have to have people think that they can just go out and buy and sell antlers. You have to have like a license to do that stuff, and the taxidermy falls under that license, but yeah, you can't just go selling a bunch of stuff with all that or buying a bunch of antlers without that. You have to have a license. So
yeah, well, thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
And squeezing us into your busy life and your bear hunting time.
My husband's at work, so I'm just waiting for him to get off.
Well, we really appreciate you coming. It was nice to chat with you, and you taught us a lot today. I think we learned a lot.
You
know your stuff. Thank you very much.
So we're excited to see the work you keep putting out.
Of course. And you're going to bring me your stuff next time?
Yep.
My stuff's going, for sure. My stuff's coming.
Depends on if we get one worthy of bringing it to you.
Yeah,
you
that's know? Another thing.
Like, that's always the challenge, you know?
I feel like everything's worthy. I mean, type of taxidermy.
No matter what we shoot, his dad wouldn't have shot it. So there's that.
You know? Get that every year.
That's a nice buck, but I wouldn't have shot it.
Really?
He's just a jerk sometimes.
Does he like shoot booners or something?
No.
No, he just likes to talk the shit?
Yeah.
But he also like is always trying to get a bigger buck than what he shot before, and he's killed some really big bucks.
Yeah.
So he's at that level where he's not going to shoot something unless it's going to pass up his last one.
That's what I'm never going to pass up my last one, so it's just not going to happen.
Was that last year?
Yeah. Do you see the one from last year?
I don't know if I have specifically. We're going to have to look. Or you're going to have to send me a picture so we can post it with this podcast.
I was going to bring it in because it's ridiculous.
Oh, I would have loved to see it.
Yeah.
You should have told me. I would have brought it in.
Yeah. Well, we will. Next time. We're going to have you have to come on again.
Bring me back.
Yeah.
I'll find a picture for
next,
you in a minute.
Eventually, we're going to have video. We don't have video yet.
Ooh.
So, you know.
So that means I have to, like, video. Not wear these clothes.
Well, I mean, it's authentic to your job.
It is. You know? That's true.
Brooks. We got some nice swag.
Yeah, she brought us Brooks taxidermy hats. That's awesome.
Also, these hats are way more comfortable than ours.
Yeah.
What kind do you guys have?
Because they're full seams, bud.
Well, we have Richardson 112.
They're the same thing.
Dude, I don't know what it is.
But that's a half seam on these ones.
But ours is a 112, like, PF or something.
Well, they're that's different. That one, but we have this style, too.
Oh, man.
And I get mine for $18 a piece.
That's pretty good. With the leather patch, too?
What are you doing over there, man?
I don't know. I don't know if the embroidery costs different, but
The leather patch is cool. Our logo will be hard to put in leather. Like if we did the full actual logo.
The whole front of the hat.
Yeah.
Just pull out the crab.
You'd have to like make it real small.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. And we'll do some chatting off the air.
All right. Sounds good.